Joshua chapter 2. This morning, Rahab, harlot of Jericho. Well, that's an encouraging person, right? What are you talking about this morning in church? Prostitution. I like the Bible because it does not play nice. It just lays all the cards on the table the way we find them in life. It doesn't pretend to be pretty and, you know, only the good people and all the nice things that they did and just the heroes. There's only one hero in the Bible, and that's God. The rest of us are not. We're the villains. And yet, it's the story of God rescuing villains. And here's another one of those stories this morning. God often works through... Oh, I forgot one thing. May I interrupt my sermon with a special announcement? We have a new offering box attached to the back wall, which we will begin using next week. On display there is the lovely and talented Mrs. Marcella Redekop, who is pointing out the box to us over there. All right, so there we are, next week. We decided the other one was not exactly that secure. You could open it and take stuff. This is not. Anyways, and I shouldn't have said that. Last week to take stuff. Anyway, back to our message. God works through, at times and often, to the most unlikely of people, including the person talking before you this morning. Few illustrations of this, and I quote from selected passages from a book called Great Leaders of the Christian Church, but they didn't start all that great. Let me read a few of them. This is John Calvin. You've heard of him. John Calvin, let me find the passage. He was a sallow, sharp-featured, black-haired, slightly built Frenchman with big brown eyes that sparkled or glared according to his mood. To avoid attacks of migraine, he ate little, one meal a day. And as he aged and his health ebbed, he grew bent, gaunt, and emaciated. He was never physically strong, and by the age of 30, he had broken his health. In the closing years of his life, he died at 54. He was constantly ill with indigestion, headaches, gallstones. Laura's not the only one. She's in great company this morning. Hemorrhoids, we're going to go down that road. Hemorrhoids, gout, and fever, all superimposed upon chronic asthma and probably pulmonary tuberculosis. Yet John Calvin spent himself unstintingly to the last in the service of God and men. William Carey, these are famous Christians. Like so many other outstanding figures in history, William Carey was an unlikely candidate for greatness. The son of an English weaver, he had limited formal schooling and as a teenager was apprenticed to be a shoemaker. Charles Spurgeon. Spurgeon. Charles Haddon Spurgeon was born on June 19, 1834, the oldest son of a coal yard clerk. D.L. Moody. D.L. Moody, who seldom used his first name, was born in 1837, fifth son of a smallholder and mason in Northfield, Massachusetts. His father died of too much whiskey when D.L. was four. The family of eight was reared in poverty by its strong-willed mother, and Moody's education was erratic because he was needed on the farm. All his life, he could never spell. Billy Graham. Billy Graham. Like D.L. Moody, William Franklin Graham came from a rural background. He was born on November 7th, 1918, near Charlotte, North Carolina, eldest of the four children of a dairy farmer having land on the outskirts and a milk route in the city. Both grandfathers had fought for the Confederacy and were descended from Scottish-Irish Presbyterian families who settled in the Carolinas before the Revolution. Billy Frank, as he was known to his family, grew up tall, fair-haired, and very high-spirited and energetic. He reveled in the farm work, but was not too attentive to the rather indifferent schooling that was available during the Depression. His special love was baseball. So now you know. Some of the great ones had a very average or below average beginning. And so as we continue our series, Bibleography, we come to a more than unlikely figure. Not a person that I probably would choose to put in my spiritual volume as a model and say, what do you mean model? Well, yeah, a model. You can keep your finger in Joshua 2, but Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews 11 in what is commonly called the Hall of Faith. And if you gaze down to verse 6, it says, without faith it is impossible to please him, for whoever would draw near to God must believe that he exists, and that he rewards those who seek him. And so you've got this introduction to faith, and then it's got a whole list of people who are models of faith. And then down to verse 30, by faith the walls of Jericho fell down after they had been encircled for 7 days, and now is our heroine. By faith, Rahab the prostitute did not perish with those who were disobedient because she had given a friendly welcome to the spies. And so she's noted in Hebrews 11 as one of the great models of faith, this prostitute, harlot named Rahab. Joshua 2, let's read the story. Israel has now come into the land. 40 years in the wilderness, they've crossed the Jordan. They are now to Jericho, the first city that they would conquer. Word has come to Jericho that they're there, and all that God has done for this people as they are now entering the land to inhabit it and to take it over, because it's God has called them to it. It is their land. Oh, by the way, from my humble theological position, what is happening in the Middle East is not just a political, sociological issue. This is a spiritual issue. That land, and I don't think God has ever rescinded on his promises, belongs to the people, the children of Israel. That's their land. Not because anybody decided it would be their land, or somebody decided they're going to draw borders, whatever those borders might be, but that is their land because God said it was. And he gave it to Abraham as a promise many, many 4,000 years ago. That promise has never been rescinded. Just a little political, no, spiritual statement before we begin. This is as they enter the land to take it over because God gave it to them. Joshua 2. And Joshua the son of Nun sent two men secretly from Shittim as spies, saying, go view the land, especially Jericho. And they went and came into the house of a prostitute whose name was Rahab and lodged there. And it was told to the king of Jericho, behold, men of Israel have come here tonight to search out the land. Then the king of Jericho sent to Rahab, saying, bring out the men who have come to you, who entered your house, for they have come to search out all the land. But the woman had taken the two men and hidden them. And she said, true, The men came to me, but I did not know where they came from. And when the gate was about to be closed at dark, the men went out. I do not know where the men went. Pursue them quickly, for you will overtake them. But she had brought them up to the roof and hid them with the stalks of flax that she had laid in order on the roof. So the men pursued after them on the way to the Jordan as far as the fjords, and the gate was shut as soon as the pursuers had gone out. Before the men lay down, she came up to them on the roof and said to the men, I know that the Lord has given you the land, and that the fear of you has fallen upon us, and that all the inhabitants of the land melt away before you. For we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea before you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to the two kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan, to Sihon and Og, whom you devoted to destruction. And as soon as we heard it, our hearts melted, and there was no spirit left in any man because of you. For the Lord your God, he is God in the heavens above and on the earth beneath. Now then, please swear to me by the Lord that as I have dealt kindly with you, you also will deal kindly with my father's house, and give me a sure sign that you will save alive my father and mother, my brothers and sisters, and all who belong to them, and deliver our lives from death. And the men said to her, our life for yours, even to death. If you do not tell this business of ours, then when the Lord gives us the land, we will deal kindly and faithfully with you. Then she let them down by a rope through the window, for her house was built into the city wall, so that she lived in the wall. And she said to them, go into the hills, or the pursuers will encounter you, and hide there 3 days until the pursuers have returned. Then afterwards, you may go your way. The men said to her, we will be guiltless with respect to this oath of yours that you have made us swear. Behold, when we come into the land, you shall tie this scarlet cord in the window through which you let us down, and you shall gather unto your house your father and mother, your brothers, and all your father's household. Then if anyone goes out of the doors of your house into the street, his blood shall be on his own head, and we shall be guiltless. But if a hand is laid on anyone who is with you in the house, his blood shall be on his head. But if you tell this business of ours, then we shall be guiltless with respect to your oath that you have made us swear. And she said, according to your work, so be it. Then she sent them away, and they departed. And she tied the scarlet cord in the window. They departed and went into the hills and remained there 3 days until the pursuers returned. And the pursuers searched all along the way and found nothing. Then the two men returned. They came down from the hills and passed over and came to Joshua the son of Nun. And they told him all that had happened to them. And they said to Joshua, truly the Lord has given all the land into your hands, and also all the inhabitants of the land melt away because of us. Then turn to chapter 6. Chapter 6, verse 22. Fall of Jericho. At verse 22, we read, But to the two men who had spied out the land, Joshua said, go into the prostitute's house and bring out from there the woman who and all who belong to her as you swore to her. So the young men who had been spies went in and brought out Rahab and her father and mother and brothers and all who lodged, who belonged to her. And they brought all her relatives and put them outside the camp of Israel. And they burned the city with fire and everything in it. Only the silver and gold and the vessels of bronze and iron they put into the treasury of the house of the Lord. But Rahab the prostitute and her father's household and all who belonged to her, Joshua saved alive. And she has lived in Israel to this day because she hid the messengers whom Joshua sent to spy out Jericho. Good story. Good story. Bible teaches us some very valuable lessons from a most unlikely character about a very important concept, which you have already referred to. And as we read in Hebrews 11:6, without faith it is impossible to please God. Rahab the harlot represents and demonstrates faith and what faith accomplishes, and the requirement of faith. Again, as I mentioned she's included in the Hall of Faith alongside many of the Bible's most prominent people. If you go back there, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, Moses, and Rahab? Yeah. And Rahab. And so this morning, I want to examine this big little word as it connects to Rahab, this, as we find it, her in the town of Jericho so many years ago. What can we learn about faith from this most unlikely person? Well, I have, what do I have, five things? One, two, three, four, five, if you're keeping notes. Number one. Faith is available to all people, irrespective of background. Faith is available to all people, irrespective of background. Say, you ever heard it said, I just don't have enough faith. You can. That's up to you. No one has to say that. There is enough evidence. There's always excuses. I don't want to have enough faith might be more reasonable because I think of things like evolution. I mentioned the spider in my prayer. I was captivated by spiders this week. I'm in the yard, and they're making their nests or webs at this time of the year. They say they're nests anyway. And they're all, Marcel always wants to think down. She hates spiders, but I kind of think it's kind of cool. You know, as long as we're not walking there, and he's right in the middle, and he's, and they make those webs go a long way. And I thought to myself, isn't evolution amazing? This chance? And the spiders wake up in the morning and go, I think I'll make a web. That's what I'll do. I'll make a web. But this is every day, and it's kind of a nuisance sometimes when it gets in your, you know, but it is quite remarkable. And to think that just sort of all, you know, happened from nothing. I admire people with that kind of faith. But anyways, it's available to everyone. The faith that Rahab represents is available to everyone, irrespective of who you are. It wasn't just for the Jews, for the Israelites coming across. It's available to everyone. You didn't have to be in the in crowd. Well, question here is, who is this woman who makes herself available and God chooses to assist his people? This irrespective background kind of person. Well, again, the background is that Israel is perched on the eastern shore of the Jordan River as they are on the precipice of the land of Israel. They're ready under Joshua's leadership to conquer the land called Canaan. Today, modern-day Israel. And they send two men out as a spy party. This is now 40 years later after they send 12 guys out. I guess this time they only need to send out two. To the city of Jericho. It's kind of a bit of a spy mission. Now, I don't know. We don't know. It doesn't tell us how they come to Rahab's place. She's on the wall, so you can conjecture for yourself. But that's where they end up. Two things about Rahab. One, again, she's a pagan. This person is not the wife of a priest. Anything but. She's a citizen of Jericho, a Canaanite city. The Canaanites were a wicked, evil, idolatrous, immoral culture. I will not talk about some of the things that they practiced. It's not appropriate in a mixed setting. They were vulgar. They killed babies and passed through the fire or threw them off as sacrifices to their gods. They had their own gods that they worshipped. Gross immorality. These were the Canaanites. In Deuteronomy 20, verses 16 to 18, God tells the people of Israel to wipe them out. So, oh, God sure isn't very nice. No, these guys were beyond. They represented sin and error, all the evil of mankind.
She's one of them. Secondly, she's a prostitute. This is somewhat at the low end of the social chain. And it still is, because we use the word and we don't, you know, this is not something you aspire your daughter to grow up to be. Brain surgeon, yes. Prostitute, no. Now, some suggest that it should be translated as innkeeper, then soften this. The problem, however, is that in Oriental custom, inns were never kept by women, and so probably not. Also, in James chapter 2 and Hebrews chapter 11, where she is referred to, she's referred to as practicing porneia. We get the word pornography from it. It actually describes her as a prostitute. She's in the sex trade. She's a sex worker. Not the person that would be high on my saving list, because she was not esteemed from a, you know, anything but that the Jews would or the Israelites would want to bring into the camp. We just need her. If only we could have her. Not likely. Tells you right away how a little hint of how God works. He doesn't think like us. His goal is to magnify his grace and his mercy and his love. How else can you best do that but by reaching down to the bottom? No one's past this grace and the faith that he then gives us. We'll talk about that in a moment, to reach in and to take this woman. Aside from that, though, Jewish tradition, and this again isn't in the scriptures, but according to Jewish writers, they say that Rahab was one of the four most beautiful women in the world, who had slept with most of the great men in that day. That adds something even too, doesn't it? I won't use the word. She gets around. Right? So right away, she just kind of gives you the eebie-jeebies, this lady. Very attractive. She's from the cover of Playboy. Now you get it? But because she seems to be well-connected, well-informed, and a good source of information, which they don't know yet, God uses anything and everything to accomplish his purposes. But she's still a prostitute. She's a harlot, a hooker, a whore, whatever you want to call her. I want it to be crude, because it is crude. We still have those kinds of images, don't we? I heard a couple of weeks ago, Willie Pixon died. I think he was murdered in prison or something. And he was the pig farmer from Coquitlam and the mass murder of all these prostitutes from the downtown east side. And, you know, that's the kind of lifestyle. And we still have that kind of a picture of these kind of people we don't want to talk about. Yet God's grace reaches anyone. No one is past his grace. No one is beyond the step of faith. There's always the opportunity to move past that, to have it taken care of, to be forgiven, to, as the Bible says, be born again. No one's past this. Romans 5:20, where sin abounded. Now, it says in our translations, grace abounded much more. But literally in the Greek language, it reads, where sin abounded, grace superabounded or hyperabounded. I don't know where you are today, either here or watching online or any background that you have come from or anything that you perhaps have done. I've done some pretty sinful things in my life. And if you knew some of the things that I'd done, you wouldn't let me stand here and preach. But then if I knew the things you've done, I wouldn't talk to you either. So anyway, we're on the same page, aren't we? And we'd be very careful that we don't look down on the harlots of the world. For there, for the grace of God, I go too. I don't know where you may be today or where you've been, but this is a good news story. Faith isn't beyond your reach, no matter who you are or what you've done. It's open. It's available to all people, irrespective of any kind of background you come from. Rahab is a harlot. Two, faith allies itself with God's purposes despite opposition. Faith allies itself with God's purposes despite opposition. Now we come to define what faith is. Word gets out that the two spies are in town. And Rahab is asked to produce the goods. I heard she stayed here. That'd be a logical conclusion. In that day, prostitutes would have often been involved in intelligence gathering. Because that's where foreigners would often go. They'd get information. Right? We used to call it pillow talk. That's what this is. This is down and dirty, all this stuff. This is the way it worked. But she hides the men and leads the security on a wild goose chase. Now some suggest, well, you know, she lied. While there is, biblically, it can make a case for situational ethics. There's a higher purpose here. I can think of some other women who lied, and God seemed to have congratulated them for it. Anybody know? Moses, right, and the women who were hiding him. Or the Egyptian house, the midwives who said, oh, the Israelites, they give birth so much faster, we can't. That wasn't true, but it was a higher purpose, a good purpose, beyond assisting the evil. But that's an interesting ethics conversation. There's a higher good here in disobeying the government, the Bible also says. We must obey God rather than man. I think of a Corrie ten Boom during the Second World War hiding Jews. Okay, this is a good thing. Now, we need to understand that this is high risk. That what she is doing, it is treasonous. If she is discovered, it is over for her. Right, this is putting herself out there. But she believes that allying herself with God's people is better than remaining where she is. That is faith. Allying yourself with God's people is better than remaining where you are. And isn't that really the big story? What's coming is disastrous. Better to ally yourself with the purposes of God than sticking with the world. Because that's not going to end well. That's the choice here. Rejecting the gods of her people and her culture in exchange for the belief in a greater God. That is the call that Jesus makes or gives to us. Right? We turn our back on the world and we live for Him. It's the choice of faith. It's belief. It has to do with allegiance and loyalty. And she makes that choice. But I would suggest to you, as we see here, that faith is and can be a very risky venture. It's not safe. in the culture in which she lived, nor in the culture in which we live. It is ridiculed, and in some places of the world, it's ostracizing, you lose your family, in some places you lose your life. It's a decision that is not to be made lightly, but it's not a dumb decision, it's a wise decision, but cost can be involved. It may cost and does cost people their friends, their way of life, their associations, their behavior patterns, that which is of the world. And she's willing to say no to that. I'm turning my back on that. I am now associating with another way. I know people who became Christians and all of a sudden they lost their closest friends. We read in the scriptures of spouses that left. Jesus tells us to count the cost. It's, we don't have to soft sell this. Just, receive Jesus and everything will go well. You just have enough faith too and you'll have a Mercedes-Benz. And I was just reading the other day, I think somebody sent me something about the number of really, 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 really expensive watches that Kenneth Copeland has. It's like unbelievable. Just be a Christian and no, this is a lie from the pit of hell. The Son of Man had nowhere to lay his head. We're promised persecution and opposition, so let's not soft sell this, although the benefit is well worth it, but it did cost her. We never know what stepping out might mean. But it's a new allegiance. Right? I don't do this from such in Canada, but in the U.S., right? I pledge allegiance to the United States of America, and they raise their right hand. Or when you become a citizen, you have this pledge of allegiance because you're now no longer a citizen of that nation. You're now a citizen of this nation. That's what she's doing here. She's raising her right hand and she's pledging allegiance. But it would be dangerous if the town had found out where her allegiance is now. It's with the enemies or they're going to overthrow them. Faith is a change of allegiance. It's available to all people irrespective of background. It aligns itself with God's purposes despite opposition. 3. Faith affirms the sovereignty of Israel's God over all of life. Faith affirms the sovereignty of Israel's God over all of life. Israel's God. There is only one God. I am the Lord your God. I am one. There are no other quote-unquote gods. People worship smaller, lesser, what they call deities, but there is only one true God. And to the atheists, there is a God. That God revealed himself to the people of Israel as Yahweh, the I am that I am. He is the God who sent his Son, the God who we worship. The Israelite God, the Christian God, same God. The Israelites just happen to reject his Messiah, which is a sad thing. But one God, and that God is sovereign over all of life. He's in control. This is Rahab's affirmation of the truth. Her confession of belief in the God of the people of Israel turns the tide in her life. 2 key phrases, verse 9. I know that the Lord has given you the land, and that the fear of you has fallen upon us, and that all the inhabitants of the land melt away before you. I know the Lord is giving you the land. He's God. That again, as I said earlier, is I think still applicable. The Lord has given them that land. What happens to the enemies of God? Just wait. I don't want to be on that side or purport to... I'm all for justice. But you don't want to be on the wrong side of this argument in battle. Verse 11. And as soon as we heard it, our hearts melted, and there was no spirit left in any of us because of you. For the Lord your God, He is God in the heavens above and on the earth beneath. Where is God not God? Nowhere. He's God. Outside of the universe and in our hearts. He's everywhere, all the time. The God of Israel is the one true God. This is her affirmation. Faith affirms the truth about who God is and what He has done and can do. We believe that Israel's God is the God, and we ally ourselves with His purposes, believing in what He says, and that He is in charge and He is in control, that my trust is in Him and no one and nothing else. That's faith. The Lord God of Israel is the only true God. There are no others. He does as He pleases. Do we believe that this morning? What is the opposite of faith? What happens when we don't believe that? Verse 9, back. I know that the Lord your God has given you the land, and that the fear of you has fallen upon us, and that all the inhabitants of the land melt away before you. If you do not have faith in God and trust Him and know Him, what's the result? Fear. That's legitimate fear because of what He can do and what He will do. The Bible often uses that term, the fear of the Lord. You say, well, He shouldn't be somebody you should be afraid of. Well, yeah. Not in a cowering kind of sense, but when I was growing up and I was 8 years old and I bashed my head, my brother's head with a hockey stick, I had a legitimate fear of my father. Right? Not because he hated me, but because there was justice in our home. Fear God, that means you don't have any sense of justice, and go ahead and do what you want. If that's a natural outcome of that. Some people, I think, lower it to the term respect, and there should be respect, but I think there should be a healthy fear here. Verse 11, as soon as we heard it, our hearts melted, and there was no spirit left in any man because of you. If we really understand who God is and what He can do, and we don't have faith in Him and in His love and His goodness and His promises to us, the only alternative is fear because of the judgment that is coming upon us. That's the book of Revelation. The people are saying, let the mountains fall on us because we can't handle what God is going to do. And we also need to preach not only His love, but also His justice. This is what happens to sinners. They are under the wrath of God. Now, the alternative, no matter who you are, is wonderful. You don't have to be under the wrath of God. You can be under the love of God as we put our faith in Him, but both are true. The fear here is justified. He is the ultimate power behind the universe and holds it in His hand. And those in rebellion are legitimately afraid and should be. Rahab recognizes this truth. The difference from the others, though, is that she does not continue in her rebellion. She affirms the truth and she submits to it. That's faith. Do we? Have we? And one of the dangers in our age is the trivialization of God. Yeah, you know, the big guy upstairs, you know, just kind of flippant. He's the sovereign king of the universe before whom every knee will bow. He is the absolute power who made you and controls your destiny, and there's nothing you can do about it. And a reminder that one day he will come in judgment to this world just as surely as he came to Jericho. It's a type. Again, I remind you of the great tribulation to come. The only escape is faith, belief, confession that he is Lord. Have we done that? It's a great promise, but you still have to do it. Four, faith acts in obedience to the revealed will of God. It's the natural next step. Faith acts in obedience to the revealed will of God. Verses 12 to 21. In response to all of this, Rahab asks that the life of herself and her family be spared. Because she knows what's going to happen and the God's people who are coming. Three conditions. One, verse 18, first half of the verse, "Behold, when we come into the land, you shall tie this scarlet cord in the window through which you let us down." This is the marker. A rope. Well, what color is the rope? Red or scarlet. Every detail in the Bible has significance. Why red? Glad you asked. Well, that may have been the mark of a prostitute, right? This may have been the red rope district as opposed to the red light district. Let's leave that with you. We'll get back to that in just a moment. Second condition, your whole family must come into the house. Second half of verse 18. "And you shall gather into your house your father and mother, your brothers, and all your father's household. Then if anyone goes out of the doors of your house into the street, his blood shall be on his own head, and we shall be guiltless. But if a hand is laid on anyone who is with you in the house, his blood shall be on his head." What does that remind you of? Passover. Y'all got to be in the house. Y'all got to be in the house. Cord of blood, whole family to remain in the house. When the angel of death saw the blood, he would pass over that house and spare it. Red blood on the house. You making some connections here? A type, I think, of the blood of Christ. How do you avoid judgment? You apply the blood to the roof of your house. That the angel of death would pass over. Well, we don't have any sheep here, but we got a cord of red representing blood. But it all got to be in the house. Exodus 12, 13, "When I see the blood, I will pass over you." Have you applied the blood? When God sees the blood of Christ over the doorpost of your life, He passes by, the judgment passes by, and you have life, you are saved. This is a remarkable typology. Oh, and you have to keep it secret, they say. You have to demonstrate loyalty. Verse 20. What's the key? Verse 21. "And she said, according to your words, so be it. Then she sent them away, and they departed, and she tied the scarlet cord in the window." What if she had not tied the scarlet cord in the window? End of Rahab. You see, faith is not simply believing, it is acting upon what I say I believe. Yeah, I believe that God, but I believe tied the word. Yeah. But have you tied the cord? Have you applied the blood? James 2:25. And in the same way, was not also Rahab the prostitute justified by works when she received the messengers and sent them out by another way? She tied the cord. She did what they told her to do. Faith applies the blood, submits to Christ's lordship, obeys the teaching of the word. It is demonstrated by lifestyle. It is a life under God's authority. You do what it says. What if the Israelites had come and her dad was next door? You know, it was a duplex. No good. You got to be in the house. You all got to be under the blood. There's only one way of salvation. Oh, what if we're in three houses? That's good enough, isn't it? No, one house. This way. One house, one cord, all there. Loyal. I've used this illustration before, but when Glenn flies a plane, I don't see Lori here this morning, but when you fly a plane, you don't choose the runway. That field looks good for my 747 coming back from Seoul, South Korea. I think I like to land in Tawasan at that airport. No, it's narrow, and you just do as you're told. This is the way it is. God says, this is the way. Many who claim faith, but they act inconsistently. That's one of the concerns that I have in this area as well. You know, sign a card, go up at the front of the meeting, pray the right prayer. It can be just very flippant. Or maybe it's even serious at the time, but there's no follow-through. No, you do what it says. You carry on, you're loyal, you have now made a change, you have a new people. God's not faked. Right. Five, faith is awarded by God through incorporating us into his family. Here's the result. The good news we start end with this morning because of what she does. Rahab and her family are spared. Chapter 6, verse 25. Rahab, the prostitute, and her father's household and all who belonged to her, Joshua saved alive. And she has lived in Israel to this day because she hid the messengers whom Joshua sent to spy out Jericho. God keeps his word. You do what he says, you will apply the blood. Cord, you got to be in the house so the death angel passes over you. You're obedient and you're loyal, and God has put you now into his family. She's now from one family, the Canaanites, and she's now an Israelite, although she's not biologically a Jew, but spiritually she's one of them. I don't know where you may have ever come from, but we're all part of the same family when you come here. The new family. And by faith, we all get in the same way. We have all hung the red cord. No God in the house. It's good news. But there's one more thing. Turn to Matthew 1. Matthew chapter 1. What on earth? This is the story of the birth of Jesus. Matthew 1. Let's start reading from verse 1. All right, that's good bedtime reading here. The book of the genealogy of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. These are good guys here. Abraham was the father of Isaac. Isaac was the father of Jacob. And Jacob the father of Judah and his brothers. And Judah the father of Perez and Zerah by Tamar. Well, let's pass by her first for a moment. And Perez the father of Hezron. And Hezron the father of Ram. And Ram the father of Abinadab. And Abinadab the father of Nahshon. And Nahshon the father of Salmon. And Salmon the father of Boaz by Rahab the prostitute. She's not only in the line or in the tribe of Israel now with serving the real God of the true God of the universe. This grace based upon her faith is extended to such an extent that she is now in the line of the Messiah. That's good news. She's come a long way. Where God transferred her immoral sexuality and made her the great, 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 great grandfather of not only David, but of Jesus himself. That's grace. Why her? Because God wanted to magnify his grace and the reward of faith. Eye has not seen, ear has not heard, nor entered into the heart of man the things that God has prepared for those who love him. Don't sell yourself short for this world. It's passing away. But those who love the Lord will reign forever. There are two families. Family of God, family of the devil. Jesus said of the Pharisees, you're of your father, the devil. She was in the father of Satan, in the family of Satan, and the Lord rescued her and brought her into his own family. What changed? Her faith. She believed it. That's all she did. Tied a cord. And her life changed completely. Some of you have known that. You've come from non-Christian backgrounds, from other backgrounds, and life in Christ has completely revolutionized you. This is what it is meant to do. This is a message that we have for the world, for the multicultural community around us. Eternal reward and the joy of possessing what is to come. Who'd pass that up? Well, the God of this world has blinded the eyes of those who will not see. What an opportunity. Rahab gave up that which was going to be destroyed and gained an inheritance she would never lose. How is it with you? That's the question. Of life. Father, we thank you for your word, for wonderful stories, not of Rahab, but stories of your grace and mercy that extends to all. A type of the Gentiles who would eventually come in. May you apply these truths to our hearts, and if we have not yet, that we would string that scarlet cord. Apply the blood of Christ over the roofs of our lives that typified that. That the angel of death might pass over. And that we would identify with your people in utter loyalty to you, we pray in Jesus' name. Amen.